And now WDEV FM and AM presents our two-hour public affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. Important topics, topical guests, and your phone calls. And now here's the host of Open Mic, Mike Smith.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us this morning. Really appreciate it. We're at the Stayhouse today, and we'll be speaking with various representatives and senators about issues that concern you. If you wish to join our conversation, call us at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. First up this morning, I'd like to welcome Representative William Bazzo, who's the chair of the House Commerce Committee. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you.
What does the Commerce Committee do, and what issues do you look at?
Well, we have a very broad range. The first thing I'd want to say about commerce is that a lot of people don't know what we want to do, because commerce to me is like the engine in your car. So you may not see us in the headlines as much. You don't really want a noisy engine, and commerce is the engine of the state making a lot of noise. But what is it that we do? We basically have jurisdiction over five major areas. The Department of Labor. So now basically you're getting into everything that has to do with employer-employee relations there. We have the Agency of Commerce Community Development and all the partners that it works with. We have the Consumer Affairs Program of the Attorney General's Office. Naturally, we have the Department of Financial Regulation, because commerce doesn't work without really good financial services, banking, insurance, for example, securities, access to capital. All of this adds up to economic development. And then we have one more. We have the Department of Public Services Telecom Connectivity Division, especially, but also we pay attention to the commerce side of energy generation, you'd say utilities in that regard, whereas natural resources pays a lot of attention to that, but also to how you're going to generate the energy and where it comes from.
As chair, how do you set the priorities of what your committee is going to be looking at?
Well, in a variety of ways, but I think one of the most important is that we have a committee process where bills get introduced, and we invite the sponsors of the bills and try to cover every single bill, and we get a lot of them, you can well imagine, to come in and tell us about it, and then we discuss them, and we set it that way. Often we set it by broad category. For instance, last year is that we had a large commitment to do an economic development bill, a consumer protection bill. And I want to make a note here. Consumer protection for us in our committee means two things. One is basically, the consumer, the individual, and what may be happening in their world, protecting us from scams, etc. But the other is business to business, because businesses are consumers too. And we want to make sure that in Vermont that there's a level playing field, and that when businesses go out to work, to compete for bids and things, is that they are competing in a way that's fair to each other and to their employees, their owners. That line.
What this year in your committee, what are going to be the priorities?
Well, last year, one of the major priorities that we identified was all of the issues that come around basically independent contractor and misclassification of workers. We've noticed and we've heard from several people that often that's an example of the uneven playing field. The examples that we hear often is that a Vermont business that wants to bid on a job who's doing the right thing, that is actually making sure that there's workers' compensation coverage, as there should be, for workers, that's the default, will come in and bid a certain amount of money, and somebody else will come from somewhere else, often not in Vermont. A company will underbid them. Now the requirement is basically go with a lower bid whenever you can. But they take a certain set of workers, we'll call it sheetrockers is the example we're often given, and they'll say they're all independent contractors, so they don't need workers' compensation. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I can bid for a lower piece of money. Our Vermont businesses don't like that. They want it to be fair and even, and they do believe in protecting workers to a degree. Well, the laws can often spill over into other problems, because we also have a lot of people in Vermont who are sole proprietors, very independent. Vermont has basically a very simple opt-out system, so that if you're the owner of a very small business, you're not required to have workers' comp. If it's an LLC, it's you and, you know, you're a few partners or so. There was a, as I understand it, and there's more to it than this, is that a few years ago, there was a court case that worked through where the Supreme Court found that if you were even doing a like kind of work, that the employer could be liable if you were found not to be having workers' comp. And that's something we want to look at this year. And we want to get that right, because it's not what the laws, in my opinion, totally intended to do, is to hamper our small entrepreneurial, or, for example, somebody who works in the South. They're an excellent tile worker, almost artisan type work or cabinet type work. So a larger employer, might be a skier or somebody, will feel that they can't expose themselves to the fact that this person doesn't have workers' comp. To do this, we need to adjust our language to make it perfectly clear when you're in compliance there and when you're not. And there's been a lot of work done by that. Department of Labor over the years has been working with stakeholders and from all sides, including labor. Labor looks at this. I haven't had everybody in for testimony on what their opinion will be. I'm sure we'll discuss the words and more favorable, less favorable, as we always do. But I do believe it would be very good for Vermont and Vermonters if we can straighten that out, because the overall mission is keep people connected to the workforce.
And it seems to be a very controversial issue out there in terms of those small independent contractors in particular that do contract to do other portions, do bring in contractors to bring to do other portions of their work,
yes,
and feel that and then feel they're exposing themselves by financially,
yes,
by doing that.
So, exactly.
So that is that one of the priorities this year of,
yes,
of the committee?
Yes.
Okay.
Right now what we're engaged in is that, and this is in all of the policy committees, is doing program review, and I named the five areas, and we're sitting down with them and asking them, what do you actually do?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you know how well you're doing it? And where is the population better off? And then looking at all of those programs and trying to discern the ones that are absolutely mission critical down to ones where we could do better.
We're speaking with Representative William Botso, who's the chair of the House Commerce Committee, and we were talking about some of the priorities that the committee is looking at this year, including the independent contractor that we just talked about,
yes,
in terms of the issue dealing with that and workers' comp. One of the things that you had mentioned is economic development. How do you attract companies to Vermont? Is it tax policy? Is it providing incentives? Or is it something else?
Well, it's usually all of the above, in a sense. Is that, and as you know, last year we made some adjustments in our veggie awards that would basically allow areas of the state that were not as competitive for veggie to come in, and that led to, you know, some pieces like GW Plastic doing better here. So that's an example. Another tax policy that we did last year that I think I'm very positive on was the first-time home buyer piece. So, but what you said, though, is really important. You're talking about attracting businesses to the state of Vermont. I think that one of the best ways to attract businesses to the state of Vermont is to compete for people, because people bring businesses, they are people. And what we do know is that the world's changing. And this connects right back to what I was talking before, even about independent contractors. These are often individuals. Think of your software folks who may want to work at home, and we need to attract that area, and they could potentially be caught up in this place where the larger company that wants to get some code written from somebody in a good way could say, like, well, maybe I better not hire that person. I'll go somewhere else. So what I want to do is I want to compete for that person who wants to be writing that code, who wants to seek the work-life balance that Vermont can offer, I think probably better than almost anywhere. We often call it quality of life, but quality of life is really good in a lot of places. But not everybody's structured so that you can live a work-life balance that probably, frankly, attracted you and me to saying, this is where I want to be, wherever our origins are.
So how do you do that?
How do you do that? I think it's a big effort. But I think it's also an effort where you recognize your customer, you recognize your audience. And this gets me to something that I think a lot about, and a lot of people in the State House are thinking about, and my committee thinks about, and that is the fact that we are underweighted in the millennial generation compared to other places. Statistics show nationally that they are the largest generation that is alive and the largest generation in the workplace. There are more workers in that area, but not in Vermont. We also know, and everybody's talking about this, is that there's needs to be replacement for the older generations that are larger. That generation will work longer, and we want to make sure there are policies that encourage them to do that and have their work-life balance too, because at a certain point in life, it's not exactly what you want to do is to work. Some people call it 40, but most of us work 80-hour weeks because we don't know what to do with ourselves besides work sometimes. You're probably in that category.
I know that category.
Me too. Many of us in the State House are show up at 7, go home at 9, but you get out of things what you put into them. But that is our value. Now, a younger generation really wants a work-life balance, and it's really important. But they face some different structural things than we did when we were growing up. And I think if you're out there and you're young, you know this. You know, basically, you are running into the situation of, I got that college education. I'm not sure about the job, but how do I handle that debt, for instance? So we need to be thinking about how we could mitigate that risk. We know that people want to be living differently. We have really good programs now about building up our downtowns and village areas, and we see that happening. And as people want to have population concentrations in those areas, first-time home buyer will help also with people who are young and they want to get started. So what I would like to see is us to be thinking more comprehensively about our package and say, we're competitive, and this is how we're going to compete, for talent, for people, for energy, because that ultimately is what drives the state. It will attract businesses, that there's a good tranche of a workforce. And this has got to be driven right down even into their career technical education, our CDCs, which are great. But there's probably some capacity there that we're not utilizing because of how some of our structures are set on how, the resources flow.
Representative Bonso, isn't it a chicken and egg thing? Don't you have to have the jobs to attract the millennials? Or do you gear up the millennials for the jobs? I'm just trying to understand that.
That's of course, everything has carts and horses. Front-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive, it doesn't matter. We need to go there. Because if you're going to do this, first you have to understand that group of people. That's one. And then two, you have to think about, what does your competitive package look like? And it can't be exclusive to that generation. It'll also have to look at older generations that are going to work in more fragmented ways.
We're speaking today from the State House. We're speaking with Representative William Bonso, who's the chair of the House Commerce Committee. If you wish to join the conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Michael in Waitsfield. You're on open mic. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, guys. I want to say I'm very interested in what you're saying. What you're saying is really very important to the future economic future of Vermont, but I think there's some avenues that we can explore to attract these people. We're not using it all. We have a lot of successful type people doing the type of jobs of the people that you want to attract here already. I haven't seen any testimonial ads from them on how they can incorporate lifestyle and economics by living in Vermont. So that's one approach. Testimonials are the best advertisement you can ever have. from anybody. The other approach, we have thousands of type of people that you want to attract coming into Vermont to our ski areas every single weekend. I see no approach to attract those people to think about living in Vermont. I never see a legislator walking around the ski areas, the gatehouse, the lodges, thanking these people for coming to Vermont, enjoying their time here, and thinking about possibly living in Vermont. I think there's so much opportunity that's free, that's not being used. All we do is complain about problems, and we have free opportunities. Can you imagine a person from Boston, New York, or Connecticut, a legislator actually came up to me and thanked me for coming to ski in their state, and it wants me to think about bringing my career up to Vermont? I just think we got to try these things, because bricks and mortar is not the future of Vermont, but what you're talking about is the future of Vermont.
Thank you.
How do you respond to Mike?
I say thank you. I think I wouldn't debate the fact about what you're talking about in any regard. I'd actually point out is that last year our committee insisted that we start working on our economic development marketing, and that we're doing fine on our tourism marketing. We're actually very successful there. And but here's the funny thing, as talking actually to a fellow who does this work this morning, and we agreed that it's both a blessing and a bane. The blessing is that it really helps a lot of our industry. The bane is that people only think about us as a place to take a vacation. What we want to do is do better in the sense of making this as a place where you can have that work-life balance and where you can start a business. So we put dollars and a real directive to the Agency of Commerce and Development is to take the first steps in defining how we're going to go about and what are the right strategies, and including the free ones that you mentioned, to go forward. I will point out that there are some examples along the line of what you're talking about that perhaps you haven't heard of. I think it may even have sugar bushes, that there was a pitch competition in which people would go up on the chairlift together and then they'd ski down, then they'd go up and you'd match up a funder with an entrepreneur. And they'd have that 10 or 15 minutes going up the ski lift to actually do that. The problem that we're trying to address is a lot for people both who are here and who are elsewhere of how they think about Vermont. I think about Vermont, and I can hear the energy in your voice basically saying that this is a good place to put your talent, your passion, or so, but we have to prove that. We can't take it for granted.
Let me ask this question. The governor in his State of the State announced funding for, promoted an enterprise fund, I think it was called.
Yes.
Do you support that?
I support the goals of an enterprise fund. Whether that mechanism is well designed, whether that makes sense, whether that's the right way for economic development to use that money or all of that money, we'll be taking testimony, I assume, on all that. It's part of our program review, and I think that's the best way to think about it. I'm pleased with he cited three results, but he forgot about two or three others that the legislature did with some of that money, and one of them is the marketing piece. Another is the first-time home buyer piece. Another was an initiative that we used some of the money to be much more targeted and aggressive about working with Quebec. So I think he's trying to talk about the home runs. I think that you also have to be looking at some of the other things that we can do to set the table for home runs.
Gave $1 million to Global Foundation. Did you support that allocation?
I'll tell you what the best part of that one was for me. It was the conversion of temporary workers to permanent workers. And I think that's something that is in our state interests, because temporary workers, often the supports that they have are inadequate. So that actually ends up an expense to everybody who does have those supports, one way or the other. That part intrigued me, especially. It's also easy to support the notion of investing in the capital equipment that they do. And it's obvious that you have to support the Global Foundries, the enterprise of Vermont, in the sense of what it does for the entire state and how it actually, imagine somebody, Yeah, let me put it this way. Somebody once said to me is that the only way you know if something matters is do you miss it when it's gone? But while it's still there, you see it very differently. And they were actually talking about, I think, a sculpture. I said, oh, that sculpture's pretty good. And he said, is it still there? I said, when it's gone, that's different. My problems are the objections with it. I'm not sure it's the right process. But that's our job, is to define the process.
Let's go to the phones, and Ken from South Burlington. Ken, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Great, thank you.
I just retired from 16 years of working in the Department of Economic Development, and my job was to visit Vermont companies and try to connect them up with programs and resources. And first of all, I want to compliment Bill and his committee. They are one of the hardest working and most thoughtful group of legislators that we are lucky to have. And I don't always agree with a lot of some of the strategies or approaches, but I just want to make the comment that and this goes for administrations where I've worked going back to the Dean administration. Everyone says jobs. And the Department of Economic Development, for the 16 years that I was there, has been and remains very, very under-resourced. We talk about a lot of very good ideas. We simply do not have the ability to pull the trigger, given the resources that have not been, just haven't been there. I think I was the last person. There used to be five of me going out and talking to companies directly. There are none now. The people that do the programs in the department, the VEGI was mentioned earlier, the Vermont Training Program, some of these programs, the Procurement Technical Assistance Center, government contracting people, they do a great job. But that's it. There's no one else in the department to really work with companies and assist them and give the feedback that's necessary to develop good policy. So that's my compliment. My view is to let's stop this jobs mantra and really start to realize that we have to really provide some resources that have not been there.
Bill?
Thank you. Jobs is very important. I think we need to compete for people.
We've been speaking with Bill Bozzo, who's the chair of the House Commerce Committee. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate the time.
That went very fast. Thank you.
This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to welcome Senator Dick Mazza to our studios, but it's a couch here.
It's a couch in the State House.
In the State House. Thank you for being on.
Well, I welcome you here today. This is a good role for you to have. And
I try to stay out of here.
As Administration Secretary, we used to ask you questions.
Well, let me ask you this question. The Transportation Committee's main responsibility on both the House and the Senate is what is called the transportation bill, and that's the funding of the transportation agency. It's the funding of transportation projects, rail, aviation. When do you start the deliberations on that bill?
We start immediately. There's a lot to go over, as our budget is over $600 million, and we deal with rail. We deal with airports, state-owned airports. We deal with all the state highways and bridges, and so there's a lot on our plate. We start right off hearing from the Agency of Transportation every day. We spend most of the mornings going over what happened last year and what our future is this year.
When do you really sort of start getting into the numbers? Is that after the governor's budget speech?
Yeah, once we hear that, and then the House takes the budget first. The House goes through the budget, and they do their job on allocating funds for different projects, and then we get it probably a month before we adjourn, and we go over those numbers, and then we add our input, and then it all ends up to the conference committee and work it out between the House and the Senate.
But you're taking testimony at the same time?
All the time. We're taking testimony, exactly, so we're not caught at the last month trying to prepare a budget, because We'll have the same information the House will, only but the budget always starts in the House.
So what are going to be your priorities in the Senate Transportation Committee this year?
Well, I think we're in a good financial situation. I think we want to continue the good work we've been doing, the agency's been doing on our bridges and our highways. We're ahead of the curve. We're doing, paving is over $100 million a year. Our bridges, we're getting those up to snuff. We were behind for a few years, but it's basically maintaining what we have, and maintenance is a big issue. We're discussing that this morning because, you know, some years we spend $25, $30 million on maintenance, and we hope the weather continues like it is. That's a great boost.
How is the transportation fund funded?
Well, a lot of it is federal funds. We receive well over $300 million in federal funds. I think it's close to $400 million. They just passed in Washington a new transportation bill, which we haven't had for many years. And I might add, we've done very well in the new proposal that Washington has given us. Our congressional delegation has done a great job in delivering the goods. So we're going to receive probably the 7-year bill. It'll probably be about a $15 million more per year. So we've done well.
And the gas tax, also a portion of the gas tax goes into that as well.
Yeah, a portion of the gas tax goes in that. Our all our fees for registration of cars, sales tax on the on automobiles. There's an array of funds that make up the difference for state funds. Because we also, I might add, we also do a lot for towns, municipalities. We have grant programs. We distribute about $25 million a year to towns for their highway aid program. So it isn't just the state funds we have to deal with. We reimburse the towns for a lot of assistance, a lot of projects, a lot of culverts, a lot of design, and cash up front that they can use on their town highways.
How do you set the priorities for your committee? And how do you set sort of the priorities for the transportation projects as well?
Well, you know, that's changed over the years since I've been here. It used to be the committees did a lot of that, setting the projects. We've taken that away, which is a good thing. We've taken out of politics, and we allow the agency to work with the MPOs and the Chittenden County Transit Authority and folks that come up with the projects. They come up with the projects that they see a priority in their areas. The agency then reviews those projects and grades them and rates them. And then they propose to us what they recommend as being the best areas to fund. So it takes all the politics out of it, and that way nobody has their pet projects. We look at the recommendations that the communities throughout Vermont has proposed to their local planning, and basically that worked great. And then, of course, the state projects, they set priorities. We have a rating program. They go out and inspect every road in the state of Vermont every year. They inspect every bridge, and they we fund them according to the need of the repairs. So we've gotten out of the pick and choose, which is a great thing. We look at their expertise because they're the ones that are qualified to do that. I'm certainly not qualified to make a judgment whether a road in Route 16 or 25 or whatever needs a
paving. Or the bridge in North Hero.
Or the bridge in North Hero, that's right. That's right, which has been on the books for some time. But we hope to get to it. But it is their call, and that's the way I like it.
We're speaking with Senator Dick Mazza, who's the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. I'm going to ask you a question that normally doesn't come in your purview, but it does this year. The governor has talked about legalizing marijuana. He has put some conditions on it, but isn't that a transportation issue as well?
Yes, it'll have to come to transportation in some form. Certainly, one of the big issues, if we've been following the newspapers and the news, one of the big issues is driving under the influence of drugs. And at this point, all our police departments, state police, sheriffs, police chiefs, all have a real concern about what process they'll be using to detect drug use while driving. And to this, as we speak today, there is no method out there that's really certainly workable. So my concern is, why rush into this until these questions are answered? It's nice to be first, but I don't think this is an issue that we should be first on, because there's so many issues that haven't been addressed. And I'm particularly concerned about the transportation issue, because we do have systems in place for alcohol detection, but there's nothing right now that would work. So I say, let the other states work this out and see their mistakes and get to us at a later date.
In less than a week, the governor will give his budget address. What are you looking for in that?
Well, I think just some stability. We hear continually over and over again, don't spend money you don't have. And I think in transportation is quite separate from the general fund. We don't see a lot of changes in transportation. Certainly, we're trying to live what money we have. But in the regular budget, if there's a loud and clear voice out there that we can't spend more than we take in, and I hope that message is loud and clear, and I think everyone's looking for that in the governor's proposal.
Do you expect new revenues?
I hope not. I don't see anything on our side, and I don't think that anyone's proposing new revenues. There may be, I might add, there every 3 years there's a fee adjustment for transportation, and that's, when I say that, I mean like driver's license or registration. There may be a cost of living adjustment, but it's minor, and we do that automatically every 3 years just to keep up with inflation. So don't be surprised if you see a couple buck increase here or a buck here.
We're speaking with Senator Dick Mazza, who is the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. I'm going to bring up a subject that the last time we spoke generated a lot of phone calls, which was salt brine. And just wondering if you've had any updates on that or taken any testimony on salt brine.
Now, it's funny you should say that, Mike, because yesterday we spent the morning in my committee talking about salt brine. In fact, we brought in a couple local repair shops who had concerns about it. So we brought the folks in to talk about brine, and we all learned a lot, even the folks that were there that have the repair shops. What we did learn is early on when brine was out there, it was very heavy on the sticky substance. When I say that, there was people talked about like a molasses mix that was mixed in with the water and salt. And that seemed to be clinging more to the vehicle than, so the new system they've enacted now only has probably a 5% sticky substance. So what that will mean is there's salt, always salt's going to be out there. We're using salt, whether you use it in liquid form or salt form, dry form, it's going to be there. That's our safety policy on our highways. We have to use salt. But I think what's going to change is the sticky substance that people say clings to underneath their car will not be as sticky, and it's only have a 5% ratio, where before it was maybe 20, 25% ratio. So I think the issue is being addressed. I think everyone was pleased to hear that. All it needs now is just a little bit of stickiness just to stick to the road.
One of the things that we talked about as well when you were on a few months ago was bicycle safety. Are you planning to have any testimony on bicycle safety?
Yeah, next week we have some bike folks coming in. To talk about that, it is an issue. It's an issue all over the state. Burlington has done a good job on sectioning off areas. But we have made a strong futures in bikes. We have made a commitment in bikes. Every highway that we pave or that's feasible for bikes, we always put a shoulder on it so bikes can ride. We don't do it all over, but in majority of the places that we pave, we try to widen it enough for bikes. And we also sweep it in the spring. We make sure that the gravel's off it. Now, is it going to be 100% bike lanes throughout the state? No. But the routes, we're trying to focus on the routes that are very heavily used for bikes. We will spend more time and more effort to try to get them up so more bicyclists can use them. I know in the islands, I represent the islands, and the islands have some good shoulders because it's a bike tourism attraction. So we're trying to do that, but we have to work together because it's not the cars versus the bikes, bike versus the cars. And we have to accept the fact that most car owners own bikes. And so let's figure this out and try to not pit one against the other. Let's work together and try to get some solid solutions in the future.
the reason why the islands are a tourist destination for bicycles is because there's limited hills, which I find.
Right, that's right. You live in the islands. You know what it's about. Yeah, and it's a big tourist attraction. As you know, we have the bike ferry that comes across from Burlington, Colchester, through the islands. But it is. There's a lot of tourism that come through the islands, and they like riding. The shoulders are good.
When will we see a new state airplane?
Not under my watch. I think we can say, Mike, that's put to rest. That's grounded.
We're speaking with Senator Dick Maz, who's the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. We'll continue our conversation after these messages. This is Open Mic. Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're speaking with Senator Dick Maza, who's the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee. If you wish to join our conversation, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to the phone lines and Jay in Chelsea. Jay, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling back. I blasted you after I'd heard the interview last time with Senator Maz and yourself about bike safety, and I really, really am very, very disappointed in Senator Maz. The problem is not the road width and conditions. The problem are several. Number one, in Vermont, we seem to have a very polarized society, a very counterculture-oriented society, where people often drive with their malice, and they also drive with their oversized, intimidating killer rigs. I don't know if you've noticed the proliferation of SUVs and large trucks, but just like a gun at home, they're quite often used to intimidate other people around them, whether on the road rather than speeding around them or tailgating them. I'm very disappointed in Senator Maz and the Transportation Committee because they do not address issues such as unsafe following distances. I don't care about tailgating. Today, people are totally disrespectful of what are considered appropriate braking distances. They tailgate you at two or three car lengths on the interstate, on the back roads. They come up, you're doing the speed limit, whatever it is. They come up on you, they sit on your bumper.
Well, what's your solution? I mean,
what's my solution?
I hear you criticizing.
You keep talking about the police and they're worried about marijuana. Well, you know what? We lose more people on the road from friggin' alcohol, and that's never even mentioned. We lose more people from alcohol poisoning than from marijuana. That's never mentioned. You know, one of the funny things about law enforcement is anybody in any normal job who would all of a sudden say, you know what, you don't have to worry about that anymore, would say, fine. But no, law enforcement's so concerned about marijuana, and you know why? Because they're bigots with badges, and it's counterculture down.
Hey, Jay, can I ask this question? What would you want?
I'd like
what's your question?
What
would you want Senator
to
do?
Anybody who hits anybody on a bicycle or a car, we do not continue to bow to the insurance companies in this no-fault nonsense. When I learned to drive a long time ago, and it was always the way it was, if you hit something going forwards or backwards while you were operating your vehicle, you were responsible for it. None of this nonsense of, oh,
sir, could I ask you the
way,
question? What would be the question? What's your question of me? You criticize me, and that's fine. I accept that. But tell me what you want me to do.
I want you to enact a law making people responsible for if they hit something, whether it's a car or a bicyclist, that they're responsible for it, and it's murder. It's murder. Yes. None of this nonsense about
I don't follow your train of thought, sir.
Extenuating circumstances, and you really wonder how important are these people in their extenuating circumstances. I could give you several cases where people have been.
Jay, let me do this. Let me try to talk to the senator about your question here, and I think I can relate it, Senator, to some aspects of what happened to my friend who was killed in the D.C. area. And there really wasn't any sort of laws that talked about the Virginia legislature is now looking at it, but there wasn't really any laws that talked about when you strike a bicyclist, the guidance in terms of what the prosecution aspect of it is? And I guess what Jay was talking about, is that something that comes before your committee, and is that something
It's not before our committee. That's judicial. Judiciary Committee certainly would have that jurisdiction of what the laws are pertaining to bicycles, accidents. All I can say is, you know, we have plenty of laws out there. It's with people. How do we enforce them? We have a law banning texting, and they're still texting and driving. We have a law of speed limits. They're still going over speed limits in work zones. So I don't care how many laws you have. We only can enforce so many, and we're doing our very best with the funds that we have. So, you know, I understand your question somewhat, but on the other hand, I don't think we're singling out anti-bicyclists or anti-motorists. I think it's an issue that we have to work together on and try to resolve it. Both of them are here to stay.
And I know that the bicycle community in the Virginia area is approaching the legislature and is approaching sort of the Judiciary Committee of the legislature in this regard in terms of the penalties. And that would be the proper way.
Sure. If you want stiffer penalties, sure. That's open for discussion. Yeah.
Let's turn back to another issue, is the issue of rest areas. There's been some break-ins into the rest areas. I was sort of stunned to learn that there's no really security, like cameras and stuff, in the rest areas. Is that something you're going
to
be looking at?
Yeah, they're coming in next week to talk about that. I was very surprised to learn everything today is cameras. They're very inexpensive to install, and it's almost a must that any business today has them. As you know, every night on TV, we see some places being robbed, and cameras are the solution to help at least catch the person. So I think that's a must, and anything we can do to prevent the damages being done to our rest areas when they break in for get a few bucks, if it's a coffee money, because there's no money at the rest areas, but it is the coffee money they're after. So, sure, I'm open to that. I hope we can address that sooner rather than later.
One of the things that you, sitting on the Rules Committee, had to deal with was the suspension of a senator, the senator from Franklin County, Norm McAllister. Would you support an ethics commission in the... there's different ethics commissions and different there's an ethics committee, there's an ethics commission. Secretary of State Condos has said, let's put together an ethics commission. Mm-hmm. I think I've heard the Senate Pro Tem talk about an ethics committee within the Senate. What's your feeling on
that? We had our meeting yesterday, matter of fact, and the Rules Committee met yesterday. It was an open meeting, and we discussed, we have a draft. The Secretary of the Senate has written a draft that we're looking at as we speak. We're going to take it up again next Wednesday. We need one. The House has one. The Senate needs one. I don't think we have to have a full-time $300,000-$400,000 ethics board on duty all the time, but we do have to have an ethics committee that issues can be brought to. And I favor it, and I think we should have something within a week.
The governor also, in his State of the State address, had mentioned pension divestment, and particularly ExxonMobil stock and coal. What's your feeling on that?
You know, that's something the legislature should stay out of completely. We have a treasurer that is certainly qualified, along with the folks that she works with, to decide. I am in no position to make that decision. I know people are upset about fossil fuels, but if we go down that road of picking and chooses who we invest in and who we don't invest in, it'll be a disaster.
The governor also talked about limiting the number of prescription drugs that a doctor, opiates that a doctor can prescribe. What's your opinion about that?
I think that's a discussion we should have, and I don't think it's got to be locked into a certain number, and I think that's I think what I would like to see is at least the medical society get on board and talk about how we can reduce the prescriptions to, instead of giving someone 30 pills, how about 4, 5, or 6. But every case is going to be different, but I just hope that they're open for discussion. That's an area that I think a lot of folks get hooked on, and I think you could do a better job.
Rail, Burlington to Rutland to New York City. Where are we with that?
That's an exciting thing. I've been supporting Burlington to Rutland, New York City for many years. As you know, we have a train from Rutland to New York City. Burlington, we're making progress every year. We get some federal monies. Where the big issue now is Middlebury to upgrade our track. It has to be all seamless track for Amtrak to go from here. They have to go, I think it's 60 miles an hour. It's very exciting. It'll give us, I think it'll be one of the most successful passenger rails once we establish that from Burlington to New York City. Probably could be done in six and a half hours. We do a tremendous amount of freight on that line, and I think passenger rail will be very successful. We have a station in Burlington. We'll have one in Middlebury. And I think I'm looking forward to it. Anticipated time is probably about 3 years, and I hope it's sooner rather than later because it will be successful. Anyone who's used airports these days, I think they'd welcome the opportunity to sit on a train and do some of their work and have a leisurely ride in New York City.
Would that mean that the other train from St. Albans down through Connecticut and over to New York City, would that be eliminated, or would that
No, what we're trying to do there, as you know, we're trying to get it back to Montreal. The success of that train is getting it into Montreal. And right now it stops in St. Albans. And we have Brian Searles working on that project because there's a tremendous amount of support. We had it at one time from Montreal to on this line on the Essex through Essex in New York. So no, that we've got to get that train to Montreal to make it a success. There are riders by the hundreds waiting to take that train.
Aviation, is there anything to report that you're looking at in your committee on the aviation projects?
No, we're turning that around. We were pouring a lot of money into it, and under the new director at Rail, he's turned that whole thing around. For example, in Stowe, the airport in Stowe now, I understand they're flying to New York or mm-hmm. Syracuse or wherever, and that's a private joint venture with private and state. And so that's going to be a very successful airport. They've put a ton of money into it. Our other airports are doing very well. They're almost the break-even point, which is good because the economic development of areas that have airports, they're very beneficial. So we're hoping for it.
Senator, I really thank you for your time. I know you're busy, and I thank you for your time to talk about.
No, it's been fun. This has been a great morning. Anytime. We'd love to come on.
Senator Dick Massey, Chair of the Senate Transportation Committee, thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Thank you. Coming up, we'll check in with our friends at Talk Media News, and then we'll speak with Representative Patrick Brennan. He's the Chair of the House Transportation Committee. And at the bottom of the hour and to the top of the hour, we'll talk with Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott. This is Open Mic on WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury, Vermont, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and 101.9 FM Island Pond. And, of course, we're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. Welcome back to Open Mic. This is Mike Smith. We're broadcasting from the State House here today. And coming up, we'll speak with Representative Patrick Brennan, who's the chair of the House Transportation Committee. But before we do that, let's go down to D.C. and talk with our colleagues at Talk Media News and Victoria Jones. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning.
Big debate last night. What did you think?
Yeah, big debate. Well, I mean, you know, we saw the bye-bye to the bromance is what we saw between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. And really about time, too, because it was a phony bromance. They were frenemies. I think I got all my cliches in there.
What did they go after each other on? Was it his status as an American citizen, or what did they go after each other on?
Well, I mean, Trump and Cruz, it was a question of Trump hitting Donald Trump over what he called New York values, which actually fell flat because Trump handled that one well, because he talked about 9/11, and you can't hit New York on 9/11. That's sacrosanct, and he did that very well. He went all, you know, he got a look on his face, and he made it sound like, you know, like he single-handedly rebuilt Manhattan, which of course he hadn't. You know, he didn't do any things about how he seen the Twin Towers from his apartment, which he said before, which is clearly untrue because he's a good 2 or 3 miles from the Twin Towers. But he said that in the park. He didn't do any of that sort of nonsense. So he just did a very sober and very powerful, really. Defense of Manhattan.
This.
I thought that was very good. And then you had the 7-minute birther exchange, and I thought Cruz came out of that very well. Whether he has the merits of the argument or not, and I think that, you know, that there may be some legal issues here. I don't know, but whether he does or not, he came out of that better than Trump.
Let me go back to the New York City values, and that's what Cruz had talked about. He sort of defined New York City values as opposed to New York values. It was specifically about New York City values. Do you think he wasn't talking to New Yorkers at that point? He was talking to Iowans at that point, wasn't he? He was trying to make a point that the values of New York City are different than the values of Iowa. Isn't that where he was going with that?
Yes, he was trying to say, look, New Yorkers are not like you and me, not like us. They're different from the rest of America. That's what he was trying to say. And you know, not a lot of conservatives come out of New York, is what he was saying, and what Trump was saying is, it's not true. It's not what New Yorkers are. You know, he was saying New Yorkers are like you and me, but he didn't say that. He didn't say that. He did a different line, and he did the line of how great New Yorkers were after 9/11. So he did it slightly differently. But Cruz said a couple of strange things when he did this, I thought, because he talked about, you know, socially liberal, pro-gay marriage, pro-abortion, and then this focused on money and the media. You know, I lived in New York City. Well, I may be socially liberal and pro-gay marriage and all these things. This focused on money and the media, I don't even know what that means. I mean, going about my day and going into little shops and, you know, little stores and things like you do, because you don't tend to go to big grocery stores to do your shopping, and going on the train and the bus and everything. People aren't focused on money and the media. I thought that was an anti-Semitic comment.
Hmm.
A veiled anti-Semitic slur.
Let's go to sort of the other candidates. Did anybody else? It seemed like it was the Trump-Cruz show. Rubio had some aspects of it as well. But what was your take on the other people that were up on that stage?
I thought that I'm going to cough because I'm still getting over my bronchitis. I thought that Marco Rubio had some good moments. I thought his hit on Ted Cruz towards the end of the debate was good. When he did, it was about 11 attacks, actually. It was about 11 issues that he attacked him on, all in one quick bam, 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 bam. That was good. He did a good job there. And Ted Cruz didn't like it, you know? And he said, yo, you just unloaded the Oppo research playbook on me. Well, that's exactly what Marco Rubio did, and he did it well. That was well done. And Marco Rubio stayed engaged throughout the debate, as he should, and he showed himself to be somebody who is, you know, I'm here and I'm engaged and I'm involved, and so he had a good night. Jeb Bush really didn't. By the way, as we speak, Lindsey Graham is endorsing Jeb Bush.
Interesting. What about those Christy Bush? Any sort of comments on them? And
Christy had some good moments, but they were moments rather than, you know, really good exchanges. But he did have some good moments. Christy, you know, Christy was not down and out. He was in there punching.
Kasich, I forgot about Kasich.
Kasich had some good moments. He said some good stuff, but I'm not sure it was the kind of stuff that the Republican primary voters really wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm. What about the undercard? Carly Fiorina really went after Clinton, kind of personally,
bitterly, actually.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that's a good tactic for her?
It may work with the primary voters. I don't think it would work in the general election if she got that far, because it really was pretty ad hominem. You know, unlike another woman in this race, I actually like spending time with my husband. Mm-hmm. What was that about? What does that have to do with the issues?
It certainly got attention coming her way, though.
Didn't it? Yeah.
Hey, Victoria, what else is happening in Washington today?
One thing that's happening in Washington today is, let me just turn to the page, Supreme Court is scheduled to meet privately this morning to discuss whether to hear President Obama's bid to revive his plan to shield more than 4 million immigrants from deportation. Now, as you remember, that was a move that bypassed the Republican-led Congress and drove them nuts. Now,
right, and a lower court sided with sided against the president.
Exactly. This is the Fifth Circuit, I think, in based in New Orleans, the a very conservative circuit court of appeals. Now, the Supreme Court could announce this afternoon whether it will take up the dispute, and if it does, that's going to be one of the biggest cases of the current term. And of course, it would likely announce its decision in June, right in the middle of the election season.
Hey, Victoria, as always, I thank you for your time and your expertise. It's always great to talk with you. That's Victoria Jones at Talk Media News. Up next, we'll speak with Representative Patrick Brennan, who's the chair of the House Transportation Committee. This is Open Mic. Mike Smith, it's my pleasure to welcome Representative Patrick Brennan, chair of the House Transportation Committee. Good morning.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here, Mike.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. I know how busy you are with the committee meetings. Wanted to sort of ask you this. And I asked this to Senator Mazza as well. The main responsibility of the Transportation Committee is sort of reviewing what is called the transportation bill. And in that transportation bill is our transportation projects, funding the agency of transportation, aviation, rail. How do you go through that process?
Well, as a committee, once we get the budget book, we call it the big budget book, we start taking it apart section by section. We'll start with say the pavement section of it, and you know, of interest to most Vermonters and most committee members is how many miles are we going to get paved of state highway this year, how many miles of interstate are we going to be able to pave and reconstruct, and then we take it down from there. We'll do structures, bridges, culverts, rail, and things are have been good over the last few years, so we've accomplished made some really great strides as far as the number of roads that are in very poor condition. We've knocked that down to I think we're at 13% now, which is phenomenal. So
was much of that helped by the federal stimulus money, or what? And as you talked about, we're you know, Senator Mazza brought this up too, we're in pretty good shape. Both shape in terms of getting some projects that needed to get done, but also because of the federal transportation bill, it seems like the resources are there to get things done as well.
Yeah, I mean, back in the era of funds, stimulus monies, and believe it or not, the federal disaster funds that resulted from Hurricane Irene were a boon to the system. Some of the projects that we had on the books to be constructed with a 20% state match, we were able to do them through Irene funds, 100% federal money. That freed up state money to do other projects. So that's one of the areas we gained ground very quickly.
Obviously, some of the revenues that you normally rely on, the gas tax, some of those have been struggling over the years. So you sort of rely on the federal government to come through on that. Is that correct?
Yes, we do. You know, we keep keep our eyes out for a federal transportation bill. We've been up in the air with just continuing resolutions over the past few years. So this FAST Act that the feds just passed is good news. It gives us a little bit of predictability because the gas tax is kind of a declining revenue. It's consumption's down. Fuel-efficient vehicles or electric vehicles are in play. Natural gas vehicles are in play. So, you know, we do suffer a little bit as far as revenues go, but we also installed a floor in both the TIB fund and the gas fund. That's protecting us right now with low gas prices.
We're speaking with Representative Patrick Brennan. He's the chair of the House Transportation Committee. If you wish to join our conversation, the number to call is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. What are going to be some of your priorities this year in the Transportation Committee?
Well, we'll be looking at a number of safety bills coming our way. Our first priority, I should back up and say that getting the budget finished up and doing a comprehensive DMV miscellaneous bill are our main charges in that committee. But we do have a number of safety bills coming from different folks in different areas. Judiciary has sent something our way. And they include they run the gamut from DUI enforcement, texting, cell phone use enforcement. So we will we'll be looking at those and some bike ped safety issues. We'll be picking those apart and seeing what has merit.
Let's go to the phone lines and let's go to Ray in Barrie. Ray, you're on open mic.
How you doing, Mike?
Great, thank you.
I want to remind Patrick that we don't need a carbon tax, okay? And because gas is low, we don't need a gas tax, which is part of a carbon tax. I need to stay away from that. And you're talking about declining revenues, but every year you ship $25 to $27 million out of the transportation fund, okay, to other funds. So it seems to me ludicrous to say that you need more money when, in fact, you're using that for other. You know, you're not using it for roads. You're not using it for transportation. You're, in fact, shipping it out to other other funds. So, and as far as the texting, leave it alone, okay? If you do anything with the texting and more people lose their licenses, then you're going to have more DLSs. You're going to have more people without insurance. Leave it alone, okay? Give it just a breath of fresh air here for a while. That's what I have to say.
Thanks, Ray. Appreciate the call. You want to respond to the caller?
Sure. The only thing I would disagree with the caller would be what we're doing with handheld cell phone devices. We instituted a bill that we really failed to put some meat in it as far as any teeth for law enforcement. So they have a hard time enforcing it. I think it's an epidemic. Personally, I think it's out of control, and if we could just tweak it by adding a penalty, a two-point assessment on your first or second offense, whichever we decide, direction to go in, that would maybe deter a little a bit of the abuse. As for everything else the caller said, I'm totally on board, and I don't think he heard me say that we needed more revenue.
I was going to clarify that. I was going to clarify that I don't think I heard you say that. As a matter of fact, I thought you said that we weren't going to be raising.
No, and I am, as a matter of fact, of interest to the caller might be a bill that I've introduced this year, and it will be coming out soon that basically puts it's called a lockbox transportation bill. It locks all revenues that currently go to transportation into transportation other than those that are already. We're going to grandfather the little bit of money that goes to fish and wildlife and public safety and DUI enforcement will still remain stable. But this prohibits anybody from putting an 88-cent carbon tax and using the gasoline tax to fund it. It protects us.
You don't support a carbon tax?
I do not support a carbon tax.
You don't support raising the gas tax?
Not at all. Not at this point. I did a few years ago. I shepherded that through the House committee. We were in dire straits, it was a consensus of the committee that we move forward and try to dig ourselves out of the hole. And I'm not a big proponent of raising taxes, so that was kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing for me.
We're speaking with Representative Patrick Brennan, who's the chair of the House Transportation Committee. If you wish to join our conversation, you can call us at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Let's go back to the phone lines. You're on open mic with Representative Patrick Brennan. Good morning.
Hello. This is Ross in Edison County. You hear me?
I got you, Ross.
Okay. Hello, Mike and Pat. I would like to ask the representative... Why is the state of Vermont always awarding all the road resurfacing contracts to the companies from New Hampshire that use all mostly New Hampshire employees, including traffic control people? Why are we not making sure the jobs are going to people in Vermont and some of the contractors in Vermont? Yes, I know we get federal funds, but that shouldn't be the excuse for not putting the Vermont workforce and people in those jobs. And why should New Hampshire workers be driving all the way from New Hampshire to come to work here in Vermont, just adding to the consumption of fuel and adding to the safety of the use of the highways? So that I hope you'll look at that anyhow. It bothers me to see like on the road from Ripton over here to Hancock, all the New Hampshire workers there and people in Vermont can use that work. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for your phone call. Paving and using Vermonters.
Well, we actually do use Vermonters. I think the caller may be referring to an outfit, Pike Industries, which does a lot of work in Vermont. Probably the majority of paving. We also use a couple of Vermont companies, Whitcomb for one, which is based in Vermont. Pike has a an office here in Barrie. We have a plant where they actually do, they manufacture asphalt. What you do see is some Pike vehicles with New Hampshire registrations. That's where their headquarters are. But I'm not saying there aren't a few New Hampshire workers doing some work over here, but we do employ Vermonters for paving here, and I think we'll continue to do so.
One of the things that I was talking to Senator Mazza about was the fact that he wanted to bring the marijuana bill into his committee because it has a transportation aspect to it. Would you be inclined to do the same thing?
Absolutely. We are charged in that committee with making sure that our traveling public is safe, and they deserve the right to be safe. And without any clear-cut way to, so far that we've discovered, to monitor impaired driving with, in respect to marijuana use, I'm not inclined to support the bill, and I would call for it in my committee until we can, if it were to pass, to explore what we're going to do, what tools we're going to give law enforcement to police it.
Salt brine has been the subject of many calls on my show. What can you update us on salt brine?
Salt brine is fairly fresh in my memory. We had a discussion on it yesterday in committee. We do hear from some of the traveling public as well as some trucking companies that it's kind of eating away and accelerating the deterioration of vehicles. But basically it's sodium chloride and water mix and with a little additive to make it stick to the roads, such as a kind of a molasses type base. It does prevent splashing of of rock salt. We use a lot less rock salt, so it's a money saver. It's more effective. It's been working well. We heard from the agency yesterday. And the spillage from previous rock salt use is down 30%. You know, you get the bouncing effect when salt hits the road. We're told 30 to 40% ends up in the ditches. So it's a work in progress. We continue to tweak the mixture to try to get it right. But we've been told from other states who use it that they're a little jealous of the way how fast we've come. Maine, for instance, started before we did as using brine, and they're already looking to us for pointers on how we're doing it. So it's working, it's saving us money, and it's keeping the roads safe. So we're going to continue to do so.
I'm going to try to get one more phone call in here before you have to go.
Sure.
Tom, could you let us have the next caller on the line? Good morning. You're on open mic.
Good morning. Jerome calling from Barrie.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question of the representative.
Go right ahead, sir.
If funds are designated solely for the transportation fund, why is it necessary to have a lockbox bill to keep the legislature from pilfering from that fund? And the other thing I have is a comment, which I meant to call you on Monday, I believe it was Monday. Sources of revenue for the legislature or the state of Vermont. One of my part-time jobs is driving people around central Vermont. And I can't tell you how many times during the week I see people running red lights. The other day, I was watching this vehicle from behind because of the rate of speed. And I was stopped, and there was a red light to my right, at least four car lengths back. He ran that red light. My proposal is to establish or put in place cameras at traffic lights that will take a photo, much like the photos used or the cameras used at toll booths. You go through a toll booth, the picture of your license plate is taken. You can't fix stupid, Mike, but maybe we can lighten their wallets.
Thank you for your phone call. What do you think about cameras? What do you think? Why do you need a lockbox if you're supposed to keep your hands off the transportation fund?
Let's start with the lockbox. You know, we assume that funds are dedicated to transportation. We have three main sources of revenue. Those are DMV fees, or the gas tax, and so we assume those are all going to transportation, but they don't. In the past, they filtered out through commitments to public safety. A little bit goes to the DUI fund, as I mentioned earlier. Some goes to Fish and Wildlife. They're used for transportation purposes. They're used for snowmobile patrols. But there's no guarantees. So this kind of locks everything in and just assures that these revenues go strictly to transportation.
15 seconds. Cameras?
Cameras, I don't know. You might want to, the ACLU might have something to say about that.
I suspect we could do a whole show on cameras.
We probably could. That's a huge topic.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. I know you're very, very busy, and I appreciate the time. We've been speaking with Representative Patrick Brennan, chair of the House Transportation Committee. Thank you again.
Thanks, Mike. Pleasure to be here.
This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. This is Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to welcome to Open Mic Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
During the legislative session, what does the Lieutenant Governor do?
Well, you know, it's really fairly broad. There's a lot of latitude in the position, and it's all of what you make of it, really. From the constitutional aspect, it's really presiding over the Senate. And then in terms of whenever the governor is incapacitated or out of the state, you become acting governor. And that's been over the last 5 or 6 years quite a bit. We're coming in on the one-year mark, actually, for the number of days that I've been acting governor. And I'm acting governor today, as a matter of fact. So I can't preside, which is interesting as well, because I can't preside over the Senate when I'm acting governor because of the separation of powers. So whenever I get the text that the governor's away, I have to relinquish my podium to the pro tem.
I thought you'd be in Iowa today.
Well, I didn't get that message, and somebody's got to stay here and run the state.
What did you think, speaking of the governor, what did you think of his State of the State address?
There was some initiatives that obviously I thought were good steps in the right direction. I've been talking about the economy, trying to expand the economy, trying to grow the economy, trying to do what we can to make Vermont more affordable for a number of years. So I was encouraged to hear that the governor taking an approach of trying to focus in some ways on that, and I thought that was the good news from the State of the State.
Let me sort of go through different aspects of the speech. He called for a divestment of coal and ExxonMobil in the state pension funds. What's your position on that?
Well, twofold. One is I was curious when he identified a single company. I thought that was interesting. I don't know what the significance was of ExxonMobil. Maybe I don't know what we have investments in. Is it BP in there? Is there other types of other big oil energy companies that are involved? And that's the other point, is a lot of these aren't just carbon emitting companies. They are energy companies. So they're transforming as we speak, I'm sure, to other areas where they're going to make investments as well. So I thought that was interesting, but from my standpoint, I don't think we should be getting involved in determining what investments we should make. I think that's up to the treasurer, and actually there's a board that has been formed to do that, much like the Public Service Board takes control, does policy in terms of energy-related matters. That was done by the legislature, creating the board to take the politics out of it. And I think that's the case today. We don't want to turn this into a political battle. Let's let the treasurer and this board determine what we should be doing with the investments. I don't think we have the expertise, and then it gets political.
Mm-hmm. He called for the legalization of marijuana with some conditions. What's your position there?
Well, I first of all, I don't know what the hurry is. I talk a lot about prioritizing what we should be working on, and that's difficult to do sometimes. I think we're in a very, very good position, unique position, to watch other states right now. Other states have legalized marijuana. Let's take a look at some of the positive and negative effects that it's had on their states. I'm sure if we asked Colorado today how they would roll this out, I'm sure it'd be much different than they did, because they've learned along the way that they've made some missteps. And I would say, why shouldn't we learn from other states? We can't afford to make any mistakes. We don't have additional money. I worry about the bureaucracy that it's going to take in order to set up the structure, the tax structure, and all the other types of things when we're really struggling in a state to take care of the essential services. So why take on something more? But if we're going to do it, and I'm not saying never. I'm saying let's take a deep breath. Let's watch other states and make sure if we do it right, and we do it as efficiently as possible.
He also called for a reduction in pain medication by limiting what doctors can prescribe for certain minor procedures. What's your take on that?
I applauded that part because I am concerned about what we're doing, the over prescribing of some of these drugs is what's leading to the addiction issues, and I think whether this is the right approach or not, I think it just highlights that we have a problem. I think that the docs in the end should be the ones that determine this. But but why we would have to prescribe 3 months worth of pain-killing prescription drugs is beyond me. So I think at least it highlights the issue, and hopefully we'll come to some conclusion there.
I think I'm presuming, and I don't know, but I'm presuming the doctors would say, why is government getting involved in the pain protocol that I'm prescribing? How would you answer that?
Well, because we have an epidemic is the answer, and we have a health problem on our hands that is having far drastic results on our economy. So it's across the nation. It's not just unique to Vermont. But at the same time, if we see a public health risk, then we have to get to the bottom of it.
Governor, in a week, will be giving his budget speech. What are you going to be looking for?
How he's going to pay for everything that he wants to do. I'm looking to see to be sure that we're not increasing taxes as the legislature has done over the last 5 or 6 years. I'm looking to make sure that we don't grow the budget any more than the economy has grown. I think those are the basics. I look at ways to get back to the fundamentals, back to the basics, trying to just not spending more than we're taking in, and trying to actually invest in pro-growth areas that will bring us the best return in the long run. And I, you know, we have a demographic problem in the state with stagnant population. We're losing this category of our youth from 25 to 45, the working class, and that's what we need to focus on. So I'm going to see what he's doing in his budget, first of all, to fill that budget gap, but also what are we doing in the future to help ourselves out of this mess.
Medicaid is driving a budget deficit in this fiscal year and driving a budget gap in the next fiscal year. What's your solution to Medicaid?
Well, first of all, I mean, it is obvious. One-third of our population is on Medicaid. That's really a stark reality, and it's something that we really need to take a look at. So, first of all, what I would do is make sure that everyone that's in the program is entitled and is in the proper position, and as I understand it, maybe some internal audits from that perspective would be in order. And I think that from what I've heard, the administration had not been doing that for the last couple of years, but they're starting to do that now.
It was my understanding they weren't checking eligibility, but are they now?
I'm hearing that they're starting to knit away at that and starting to take a look at that. So I think that's encouraging. But that's the first thing that we've got to do, to make sure that, you know, the 200,000 people that are on Medicaid or in the system are entitled to be there. So let's do that first. Let's take a look at the audit that's been done by the auditor over the last couple of years to be sure that some of the recommendations that he had come up with after the audit, that we did something with it. I hear, you know, many people are saying we should do another audit. I'm saying maybe, but let's why replicate something that's already been done if we're not going to take the advice? So let's take a second look at that as well.
Let's go to Rob in North Carolina. Rob, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
Phil, I know you support veterans. You have your whole career. And my question is directed toward health care for veterans, particularly in Vermont. Are they getting the proper care? What are you hearing from veterans groups like the VFW? And just to put a plug in today, Mike, for your brother's the new movie come out today, 13 Hours of Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. Salute to you, Mike, and your brothers.
Thank
and
you.
Your bravery.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for the call, Rob. Yeah, I really, maybe because my dad was a World War II vet, disabled vet at that, was injured in the D-Day invasion and was a double amputee and lost his life early in life when I was 11. So I'm particularly sensitive to the needs of veterans, and I think we should take a moment every single day. If you see a veteran, thank them, because without them, we wouldn't be here to enjoy the freedoms that we have. So I'm sensitive to their needs. I always look for ways to agree with people and find ways that we are similar in our views. And while politically sometimes I'm not completely aligned with Bernie Sanders, I will say that Bernie has done a great job for our veterans, always standing up for them, doing what he thinks is best and fighting for them. And that's something that we need to continue to do, because I do hear from some vets that there is a lack of services. There is a lack of taking care of them and fulfilling our promises. So that's something we always have to keep in mind.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott. When we come back, we'll talk about some of your priorities and whether you support a carbon tax. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're speaking with Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott. Wanted to turn to the issue of your priorities here in the legislature, but before, I wanted to get an issue out of the way. Carbon tax. Do you support the carbon tax?
I do not. I think it's one of those issues that has a far-reaching effect. From my standpoint, we seem to be fixated, or a lot of people are fixated, on the 88 cents a gallon tax on gasoline, but I look at it as an increase in cost across the board, whether it's for fuel oil, for propane, whatever it is. It doesn't just affect the person that uses that product. They're going to increase the cost across the board. So it's going, the cost of living in Vermont, I believe, will increase accordingly, whether it's in groceries, services, whatever. They're going to pass on those costs to you, the consumer. So I'm looking for ways that we can actually make Vermont more affordable, that we can live within our means, try and take into account that all the fees and all the everything that we do, taxes and so forth, that make Vermont unattractive to many. We need to reverse that trend.
What are your legislative priorities?
Certainly, the budget is something that I just think we need to pay attention to in this legislative session. I assume you're talking about.
Yes.
Just trying to take care of the basics, prioritize what's really important. And so that's one of the issues we talked about marijuana legalization before. I just don't see that's a high priority in Vermont. I don't know who it's really affecting at this point in time. I think the budget and Medicaid and things of that nature are affecting people. I think this dysfunctional healthcare exchange is affecting Vermonters. And I think those are the things that we need to pay attention to and put the legalization on a different track, maybe on the back burner for a while until we get that information back, until we can figure out how we can detect impairment on our highways, make our highways safer. How can we? How are we going to develop a structure in this manner? How are we going to take in the money? Who's going to do that? There's so many unanswered questions that leads me back to the same old thing. What's the hurry? What's the priority when you compare it to other things that we're facing in this state that are very, very important?
The first week of this session, of course, was dominated at least a few days by the McAllister debate. The Senate voted to suspend him. Yesterday, the Rules Committee talked about an Ethics Commission or an Ethics Committee, depending on what, you know, Secretary of State Condos wants an Ethics Commission. The Rules Committee yesterday talked about an Ethics Committee. What's your take on the need for an Ethics Committee, Commission?
I think there certainly needs to be a better process than we have today. I think that we need to, it was highlighted in the fact with the Senator McAllister case that we didn't have a process that we could look to adhere to. For some, it was, should we expel Senator McAllister? I was opposed to expulsion because I think that he deserves his day in court before we come to that conclusion, because we would have had to try that case in front of the Senate, and that's not appropriate from my standpoint. I wouldn't want to have an effect one way or the other on his case in court, criminal court. These are serious charges he's facing, and from my standpoint, again, I look at it the same. I categorize it the same as he's a public official. It's the same as whether if he was a police officer or an educator, they would be immediately put on administrative leave. And I think that our suspension, the suspension of the Senate, did just that. And I think we got that right.
I want to turn to presidential politics in just a moment, but I have a phone call, Rama from Williamstown. Rama, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Lieutenant Governor.
Good morning,
Rama. Reference to the marijuana legalization. And, Phil, you asked the question, which is coming from the foot draggers there in the State House, is what's the rush? And my real question in response to that would be, after three or four decades of having this discussion, what's holding us back when we've reached a general social consensus to end the cannabis prohibition? And how many people have to face legal sanctions for trying to smoke a little bit of pot in the privacy of their own lives? How long do we have to keep medicinal marijuana off the shelf for everything but the most serious and debilitating diseases where somebody's close to death? And how long do we have to make it extremely difficult for farmers to grow industrial hemp before you decide that this issue really does affect people? And after 30 or 40 years of debate on this, I don't think we're rushing. I think we're facing foot dragging. And unfortunately, Phil, I think you're one of those. But, you know, thank you.
Because we're running out of time.
I wholeheartedly disagree with you, Rama. I would have to say that, first of all, I'm a proponent of growing hemp. I think that's great. I voted in favor of medicinal marijuana, and I also was a proponent of decriminalization of pot. So I would contend that we aren't arresting people off the streets for a little bit of use. But we are in a position right now. There are other states that have legalized. We don't have to be the first on this one. And why not put into place a process that is fair to everyone, that is efficient, that we make sure we don't make mistakes like other states have made? Let them make the mistakes first. We don't have the resources to do them again. So I would say that waiting another 3 or 4 years after Rama said we've been doing this for 30 or 40, I don't think that would be the worst thing in the world to do.
I ran out of time to ask you about presidential politics, but do you support a presidential politician?
I still don't, and I'll go back to what I said before. There's two right now that I will not support. That is Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. Those are the two. And I'll take my heat for that as well, but I think there are others that I would like to consider, the Christie, the Kasich, the Rubio, and so forth.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you very much.
I want to thank our guests on Open Mic today, Representative William Botso, Senator Dick Mazza, Representative Patrick Brennan, and Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott. This is Open Mic.